everybody. Welcome to episode 145 of Rain Delay Radio. My name is Naim. This is going to be a quick, hopefully, intro because we've got a lot of Championship Series preview action coming for you in this episode. But joining me, it's no surprise, it's Pat. How's it going, Pat?
What's up, guys? It's going good.
We are coming to you a day early or a night early, naturally because of the Championship Series starting. It is Sunday instead of Monday here, but it's the Championship Series start tonight on Sunday. So we wanted to get this episode out a day early so we can get these previews out to you. But we figured instead of having a Championship Series episode and then a news episode a day later, we'll just release a day early. So here we are talking about everything.
Dancing
on our own. Yeah, let's start with a very, very quick division series recap because we're going to talk more about them in the CS previews. But the Rangers took three in a row. They swept the Orioles in that side. The Astros took three of four from the Twins, advancing. So that ALCS is going to be Astros Rangers. Pat, you didn't get to talk about this at all.
So I'll
give you just a quick moment here to talk about, you know, your any thoughts you have on the ALDS and then this fun ALCS matchup. This is a fun matchup.
Yeah, so the Orioles got completely embarrassed. Evan Carter is a beast.
Evan Carter, dude, what a postseason man.
He is so much fun.
It's the year of Evan.
He reminds me of Josh Hamilton a lot.
Yeah.
Just without being a piece of garbage. Just the way he hits it reminds me of Hamilton.
Hamilton piece of garbage thing has nothing to do with his drug use. That's a problem that, you know, blah, blah, blah.
No,
blah.
That's not what it has to do with. Yeah. It has to do with the other stuff.
The other stuff. Yeah.
I just want to be like clear that
everybody's like, well, Pat hates Josh Hamilton because he used drugs. That's not it. It's the other thing.
Oh, please. His swing reminds me of Hamilton a lot. Like, dude's a beast. Baltimore was just completely overmatched.
He's so young, dude. This dude's gonna be around for 15-20 years, you know?
Oh yeah, dude.
He's like 20 years old, right? Like, it's
he's 21. Sick.
21. Yeah.
Twins Astros. I wanted that to go five. Like, I was really hoping the Twins would keep it competitive, and they actually did. Like, they managed to keep it competitive, but like, the Astros are built for October, man. So I'm not shocked that they got the win.
And you know, and we said this quite a bit, like that team has been there. Like, that team doesn't get rattled, you know, like no matter how and you know, Lewis talked quite a bit about how the Twins fans were able to sort of rattle the Blue Jays, but like the Astros, you know, and we're going to talk about this a bit later too. The Astros don't get rattled in that way. They've been there a bunch, and this core group has been there a bunch. They don't.
Yeah.
You can't rattle. You can't rattle them the way you can another team.
Yeah. That said, this ALCS, like, dude, it's going to be a bloodbath. Like, if any of these championship series is going seven games, it's this one.
Yeah.
It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be fun to watch. I'm, like, obviously having a team in the NLCS, you're excited and you're looking forward to that. I am extremely looking forward to this ALCS, though.
Yeah.
It's, like, as a baseball fan, this is going to be fun. Like, this is kind of like, it's like Yankees Red Sox from years ago when they played in the ALCSs, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a fun ALCS. NLCS on the NLDS side, Phillies 3-1 against the Braves. The Diamondbacks sweeping the Dodgers. That is, you know, sort of the shock of the postseason so far. I think everybody has been bullish on the Dodgers for a long time because they have had this regular season success and they've made it to the playoffs so many times. But man, that team is not the Astros, you know, like
you
kind of think they're the Astros, but they're not. And it's like, it's wild. We
talked about this a little bit in our NLDS or NLCS preview, but like, they went in with the corpse of Lance Lynn, the corpse of Clayton Kershaw, and
the pitching just wasn't
a rookie pitcher. Yeah.
Right. Right. And but like, you know, you it feels like the pitching isn't there for the Diamondbacks either. You know, like they can barely string together three starters. Right. They had to start Brandon Pfaadt game one of the NL wild card. Like that doesn't feel like a team that is going to beat up on the Dodgers. And they just did. And so, Phillies and Diamondbacks, two wild card teams, the first and second wild card are going to be was Diamondbacks second or third, technically?
They were the third wild card.
Third wild card?
So it's like, oh no.
They drew a tie, but like,
yeah.
It was just like a weird quirk of of like the way they eliminated tiebreakers. So it's just like, hey, it's regular season records. Anyway, Diamondbacks, Phillies, is that National League Championship Series, and that's going to be fun to watch as well. We talk quite a bit more about that later in this episode. We have Frack and Phil back to talk about the ALCS, and then Pat will be back with Hack to talk about the NLCS. So that'll be coming later in this episode. Quite a bit of Championship Series talk, but it's going to be fun. Let us talk about what happened in this past week. First of all, I want to start with the Cardinals news, not because it's Cardinals news, but because it's the news that I kind of just want to get out of the way, which is that armed men broke into the Cardinals Academy in the Dominican Republic, took players out of their rooms, held coaches hostage at gunpoint. They robbed money and jewelry from various players. In the past few weeks, the Guardians and Marlins have also been robbed by armed men. The usual practice had been, this is all from Hector Gomez, HGomez27 on Twitter. The usual practice of these robberies in the past have been taking only baseball equipment, but now academies have been dealing with armed men taking cash, valuables from safe boxes, and holding coaches and players at gunpoint. Cardinals president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, in a statement said this was scary on many fronts. Our players and staff were shaken up, but not harmed. No one was injured, and we will reassess our security provisions immediately. Man, that just like...
just wild.
Yeah, man.
Just like so much wild crap happening in the world, man. And just like that, seeing crap like that invade baseball too, it's just... it's wild.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, like these, I mean, you know, this stuff happens in countries like the DR, and like, you know, sometimes you get a little desensitized to it, but like it's sad and it sucks, man. Like it's not good.
No.
By the way, the Lynn Worthy, Cardinals beat writer, like posted about the John Mozeliak news. Somebody on Twitter responds that, so they'll have to use money to replace what was stolen, which means less money to spend to improve the team this offseason. Great. And Derek Gould, another Cardinals beat writer for the Post-Dispatch, goes, don't forget the cost of gas and milk. As that goes up, they'll have less to spend because it costs more to something, something, something. I just love when people have bad takes, and people who like shouldn't really be engaging with the bad takes are like, you know what? This is going to be fun. Like,
yeah.
Having bad takes when arguing with a professional writer seems like a not smart thing to do.
No, it's not smart.
Yeah. But yeah, we it sucks, and we hope this stuff stops, but like, you know, scary stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about, there was a lot of news that came out of the Phillies Braves series. I think probably because there was a lot more national media attention on that series than any of the other three, just because of the, you know, the rivalry in that matchup. It was such a strong matchup, so it's just a lot ended up coming out of there. I want to start with the Jake Mintz stuff, which is not exactly baseball news, but is definitely adjacent. Jake Mintz, if you don't know, if you have not followed the story at all, if you haven't heard, Jake Mintz is part of Cespedes Family Barbecue, was in the Braves clubhouse as a credentialed, you know, BBWA reporter. Yep. And heard, what was the exact quote? I didn't see what the quote was that he heard.
So Arcia was running around the locker room, cackling, going, ha 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 ha, attaboy, Harper, attaboy. Right, yeah. Now, this was after Harper got thrown out on the 8-5-3 double play because he had thought that the ball Castellanos hit was going to fall. He didn't expect Michael Harris to make the wildest catch of his career.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And like, and Harper had said in the interviews, right, the next day he made, like, or that evening, right, he was like, look, I screwed up, right? I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but Harper was very much like, I should have, you know, not run so hard in that scenario.
He took accountability, which is what a team, right, when they lose should do. He took accountability.
All right, well, we'll get to it, Pat. We'll get to it. I know what you're going for here. So he took accountability, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, the Arcia thing is, Jake Mintz reported on it because he was in the clubhouse. He's a reporter in a clubhouse. That's a thing that should happen. And then all hell kind of broke loose. People got very upset. The Braves complained about the sanctity of the clubhouse. Alana Rizzo went on MLB Network and said the clubhouse is a sacred space. She said some jackoff comes in at the end of the season and gets a credential. God only knows why. And the clubhouse is a sacred space, which is, look, I'm not going to.
Travis d'Arnaud said the clubhouse is a sanctuary.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Garrett Stubbs is running around with beer boxes on his head. It's a sanctuary.
I'm not going to impugn Alana Rizzo's journalistic integrity, but she did marry a player who she met in the clubhouse. So I don't know how sacred that space is. But, you know, a lot of people, I mean, it went, there was quite a bit of back and forth. The baseball writers, the BBWAA weighed in. The official BBWAA weighed in, said on October 12th, Jake Mintz was subjected to a personal attack during a segment on Major League Baseball Network. For the record, Jake is a BBWAA member in good standing and has earned the right to be credentialed through his hard work and quality baseball coverage. To assert otherwise in vulgar terms is both unprofessional and unacceptable. The BBWAA 100%. Is deeply troubled that the league's own network would permit the disparaging of one of our members in this session, scrutinizing our as part of the territory, but comments such as these should have no place on MLB Network. Alana Rizzo then apologized to Jake Mintz and the entire BBWAA, but what a just, I mean, nut. There were certainly people on Rizzo's side of the argument, but definitely
a lot of Braves fans.
Definitely most of what I saw was, you know, on Mintz's side. Like, it's I think wild to me to call the clubhouse a sanctuary or a sacred space.
Like, here's the thing, like, you're in the playoffs, dude.
It's not like somebody was listening at the door, right? Yeah. There were reporters in the clubhouse. You knew reporters
there's
in the clubhouse.
Mics. You're in the playoffs. There's hot mics. It's gonna get reported on. And if you want to run around and run your mouth and all that, that's fine. But it's going to get reported on. And guess what? It got reported on. It got over to Bryce Harper. It got over to Phillies. And guess what? That galvanized them. Not like they needed to be galvanized anyways, because Castellanos, after game two, said, hey, we thrive after getting punched in the face. But hey, you gave them the extra ammo.
Yeah. By the way, a friend of the show, C. Trent Rosecrans, pointed out that he put that quote in the fourth sentence of the 21st paragraph of a 24 paragraph story. So it's not like he was, like, you know, trying to make this like a big, he wasn't making it a story. It became a story.
No, he wasn't.
But like, he was like, look, here's a thing that happened. It was in the 21st paragraph of a 24 paragraph story. It was deep. It was buried.
Because Braves fans will read that article. They'll find that quote. They'll think it's funny. Like, haha, yeah, Bryce Harper sucks. And then they'll share it. And guess what? Harper sees it, gets back to him. Yeah. You're going to give them the motivation. You're going to give them the ammo.
Yeah, exactly. Look, if you're going around the clubhouse saying something in front of reporters, like, it's just, I mean, you got to know better. You just have to know better. You know, like, there's reporters there. I get it. If this was a situation where, like, somebody left a microphone and then walked away, or if, like, somebody was, like, listening at the door, that's a whole other situation, right?
Right.
But you're in a moment where you know there's reporters in the building. If you're gonna mouth off, you know, you got to expect it's going to get reported. And anything else is just, like, it's just dumb. You know,
it's ridiculous.
So, and Arcia complained about it. And it's like, then don't say it. Don't say it in front of a report if you don't want to get reported.
Not only did Arcia complain, like, he let it get into him. And then, like, There's videos of Arcia in the dugout.
In the clubhouse. There were reporters in the clubhouse, dude.
Yeah.
There were tons of reporters in the clubhouse. It was after a playoff win. There's reporters everywhere. There's microphones everywhere. What are we talking about man,
there's so much with this series and the saltiness just coming from the Braves side. Like, there's just so much that I could get into here. Like,
yeah, sure.
Braves reporters were complaining that the Phillies turned the sprinklers on them because they were hanging outside the dugout well after the game was over. And the grounds crew told them, hey, you guys need to get back in the clubhouse. We're about to turn the sprinklers on so we can do our jobs. And they straight up refuse. So guess what? Hey, sprinklers are timed. They're going to turn on. And then, like, the Braves reporters just complained about it. You know, you've got Orlando Arcia in the dugout in the middle of an elimination game, getting into arguments with Phillies fans in the middle of the game. Like, it's just absolutely ridiculous how the Braves... how their reporters and how their fans conducted themselves throughout this whole series. You threw trash on the field in game one because a call didn't go your way. But everyone wants to come at Philadelphia because we're loud and we're rowdy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, let's have one more because you're already fired up. It sucks to do this all back to back, but it was a lot in this series, and it was not a lot of the Phillies doing it. That's the thing, you know. Like, the Phillies were like I said, Bryce was like talked to reporters.
We're doing what we do. Up.
Like the listen, we've talked quite a bit about how the vibes of the Phillies are immaculate, and the Braves felt like they had good vibes all season. It just kind of all came crashing down at the wrong moment for them. I think somebody in the Phillies dugout was wearing an Attaboy Harper shirt, right?
I was in the clubhouse during the celebration.
Yeah.
Ryan Kirkering had an Attaboy Harper. It said Attaboy Harper on the front, and on the back it said, oops, he wasn't supposed to hear that.
I mean, you know, like, they clearly took it in stride, right? And the Braves clearly didn't. After the elimination game, after they got eliminated, Acuna did not speak. He grabbed his bag, said, I have to go to the bus, as other players remained in the clubhouse. You know, it's one of those things, right? Like, you are expected in that situation to stand in front of reporters and be... I get it. I get it from Acuna, the player that plays with passion. It's a kind of thing that you're like, we lost. I really don't want to sit here and talk about it and dissect it right now. What are we going to do here? You know, like, there's nothing... Like, I get it. I'm on Acuna's side here, in a way. Like, I think largely I probably lean against him here, but I'm going to take Acuna's side here because I know that you are going
to
take the opposite.
I'm about to go off. Well, here's the thing.
I'll defend Acuna a little bit here.
That's fine. But like, this team lacks leadership. This Braves team lacks leadership.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And Acuna is the MVP. He's the leader of this team. Yeah. And you know what? For as cocky and as arrogant as they were all year, rightfully so, you guys got smoked in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, you had two innings where you were better than the Phillies, and then we just owned them the rest of the series. And all, you know, Acuna doesn't want to talk to reporters. Riley's complaining about, you know, everything that happened. Like, no one played with fire in that series except Austin Riley. He was the only one.
Right. Yeah. No, it's
no one that, else.
This is where the, you know, replacing Freddie Freeman with Matt Olson, really shows, right? Like,
yeah, Freeman and Swanson, if they were on this team, you would not see that happening.
Yeah, I don't know as much about Swanson. You know, I believe you, but like, with Freeman especially, Freeman was like, and that's the, you know, he was there. Like, Freeman was like there with Chipper, right? Like, Freeman's been there for a while, and he was that sort of the clubhouse leader. And you're right, Nia, that Acuna needs to be the guy who steps up there and becomes the next clubhouse leader because he is the face of the team and whatnot. And
he just runs to the bus. I'm supposed to take that seriously. I'm supposed to, like, if I'm a Braves fan, I'm pissed that there's no accountability for my team.
I think that's fair. I think that that's a fair criticism. But I, you know, like I said, I get where Acuna's at, where he's like, what are, like,
I get it too. Like, I get it too. But
the culture of we need to talk about, like, dissect exactly what just happened and why you failed and all this right away as soon as it happened, like, that sucks for players. You know, that's not
I agree. And maybe it's different for me because I get that accountability from my team.
Yeah.
Like, Harper, Cassiano, Schwarber will give that accountability.
You know, but it's like, you know, on some level, they do need to be accountable, but like, do they need to be accountable the moment? You know, like, if, you know, Acuña, like, what is the difference between Acuña being accountable the second that game ends and being accountable a week later when he's had time to think about it?
It's a bad look in my mind because the dude was cocky all year. He was so, that whole team was so cocky all year with how they ran the bases with the stupid home run celebrations. Like, ridiculous.
It feels like an effect of that, like, 24-hour media cycle, right? Because, like, you know, 30, 40 years ago, when you didn't have that, Acuña could get on the phone with a reporter 2 hours later and it printed in the newspaper the next day, and that's when you see the interview, right? Whereas now you're expecting that to happen moments after the worst night of his year, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I get both sides of it. It's just like, it's such a weird situation for a guy to have to be in, of like, this is the worst night he's going to have this year, maybe, you know, like, most likely, right? Hopefully this is the worst night he has all year, right?
Yeah.
And like, to have to then go and talk to reporters, which is something that is not fun, and talk about where you failed, which is not fun, and have them say, like, after being so great all year, what went wrong? That's like, it just sucks, you know? And like, so I get, you know, and like, it's not, and by the way, it's not that he didn't deserve to be cocky all year. He's probably going to win MVP.
Rightfully so, right? He did.
It's one of those things of,
if,
like,
you're gonna,
like,
talk all that all year, and you fail at the end of the year, you gotta back it up.
I know, and I don't disagree that he maybe should back it up, but like, that we expect him to have to back it up minutes after that moment is I think, you know, like, that's just, it's hard, man. Like, that's hard, you know.
Between that and like, listen, I hope we never have another Phillies-Braves playoff series again, just simply because of how toxic it was and, like, how much it drained me. Like, the fan base, the Braves fan base was ridiculous. They were, like, sure, our fan base is ridiculous, too. We were bullying Blooper on Twitter.
Yeah.
To be fair, he started it. But, like, they're just crying about the playoff format and how it needs to be reseeded and all this stuff. It's like, dude, you're the elite team. You are the best team in baseball. You should be able to beat anyone that comes your way.
Well, Pat, you're giving me great segues here. Let's talk about a guy who might be the next leader on the Braves.
The only one I have respect for after this series. Him and Austin Spencer Riley are the only ones.
This is a quote from Travis Sochik. And look, I mean, if Strider and Riley are the next leaders of the Braves, I think that's like fully reasonable, right? It's just like the Acuña era is just this kind of weird. And by the way, like, you know, Riley and Strider, like, Riley's older than Acuña. Acuña's just been around forever, but like, Riley's older and Strider's only a year younger. So like, it's not like it's out of the question that like Acuña is just like, hey, he's great, but he's not like the clubhouse guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, again, as a Phillies fan, right? You're lucky. Bryce Harper gets to be both, you know, like, he gets to be the team MVP and the clubhouse leader.
It's not
right?
Just him. We've got Schwarber. We've got Cassianos. We've got a ton of clubhouse dudes.
But they're not like Harper is both the MVP of the team and the clubhouse leader. Right. Whereas Schwarber and Castellanos, they're good. You know, or sometimes Schwarber's not good, but that's fine.
Let's not have this argument again. I swear.
but they can lead the clubhouse in other ways. Strider and Riley are both two of the better players on the team. You know, Austin Riley might win an MVP in his career. Like, it's not out of the question.
No, Spencer wouldn't Strider shock me if he did.
Might win a Cy Young. It would not out of the question, right?
Well, he Strider's needs another quote.
This is from, he was close to getting it this year until kind of like the end of the season.
Yeah, I think maybe.
6 weeks ago, Strider was in the conversation.
No, he definitely was.
it wasn't a great year for NL pitchers, for what it's worth, but like he gets the strikeouts, you know. Travis Sochek, writer at The Score, this is a quote that he tweeted out. I'm not sure if this is original reporting or he heard of someone else. The people trying to use the playoff, this is from Spencer Strider, the people trying to use the playoff format to make an excuse for the results they don't like are not confronting the real issue. You're in control of your focus, your competitiveness, your energy. If having 5 days means you can't make the adjustment, you have nobody to blame but yourself. I mean, that's what you know, whether he's right or not, that's what a guy needs to be saying, you know. This is you know, on the hockey side, which I don't know why it comes up so much when you and I are on, Pat, but because I'm not a huge hockey fan. The Blues captain for the last few years was Ryan O'Reilly, and Ryan O'Reilly was the captain for one reason and one reason only, and it's because he was so good in the cup run. Ryan O'Reilly, I hated as a captain. Really? I didn't like him all that much as a player. I thought he was an awful captain because he did a lot of the, like, he did a lot of not this, a lot of like, we didn't like, not a lot of like, we didn't play well or we didn't do this. It was like, yeah, like it felt like a lot of not taking responsibility for the team and just blaming it on other things, where it's like, even if you, Ryan O'Reilly, were the only one to score a goal that night, you got to take responsibility for the whole team. You're the captain.
He sounds like Mike Richards when Mike Richards was the Flyers captain.
It really frustrated me as a Blues fan to see O'Reilly doing that kind of stuff. And I was like, I never really cared for him. Yeah. Like, it was so
all that's known as Mike Richards and Claude Giroux.
Yeah.
And I remember the Eric Lindros days too.
Yeah. So, you know, and you know, Strider is a guy who's like we're saying, right? Seems to be like a guy who wants to take responsibility of like, look, we failed and that's on us. Like, you can't say anything else. And the Braves, for what it's worth, they were the Braves were the one team who was like, we're gonna have camp, right? That was the Braves.
Yeah. And they did simulated games.
They did simulated games, and it's like, hey man, that's a great idea. It didn't work out for them, but like, I think next year teams are going to be doing that.
I think
like,
so.
Like, you know, whether or not it worked for the Braves this season, like, it is what you need to be doing to keep in shape and keep in the moment. And look, I don't know, you know, and Strider, obviously, you know, this is not a thing that you should do. It's not a thing that he did do. Didn't call out specific teammates or anything like that. Didn't say this guy didn't train, blah, 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 blah. Didn't say anything like that. And didn't even really imply that people didn't train, right? He didn't like that. But if that's what happened, right? You know, it seems like Strider is a guy who didn't lose that. But like, that's the thing that happens, right? You get 5 days off. You're like, great. Like, let's party a little bit and then, you know, and then get ready for the games or whatnot. Like, I understand the concept of the days off means you lose your focus because you don't have to go play meaningful baseball.
Yeah.
But you don't have to lose your focus, right? You can still go in and have your routines and like keep your focus in. And you know, Strider had a good start, right? Like,
I left this series with a ton of respect for Spencer Strider because, like, yeah, he took the loss in both games, but man, like, that Philly crowd threw everything they had at him, and he did not appear rattled. Like, yeah, he gave up 3 home runs, but like, he was still good, and like, he was able to handle it.
Yeah, absolutely. If we're talking about leadership, like, this is a guy who is talking like a leader, you know, and it really feels like that.
I wonder if there's some complacency from the Braves because they won a championship 2 years ago and because they felt like they could go into this break not really needing to do anything. Same thing with the Dodgers. Like, I'm noticing it really affects the teams that like have won it already in the last few years, aside from the Astros.
The Braves did a thing that nobody else was doing, which is go in and have sim games and like try to make sure to stay fresh. So I don't know, you know, there might have been a bit of that in like their heads, right? But like, I think it was just like, I think they just got beat, you know, like, these are two good teams, you know, like, I don't think there's anything like embarrassing about being beaten by the Phillies. The Phillies are good.
I'll tell you what, we know a few Braves fans and that would tell you otherwise.
I don't think they were like embarrassed. You know, again, like the results were not like.
I know Dylan would agree with us. That wasn't embarrassing to lose them. They're the reigning NL champs for a reason.
Games to be closer, right? Yeah. Like the fact that the games were not as clean, you know, like that 10-2 loss is really a stinger, right? If these were all like 3-2, 5-4 games, like I think that would take the sting out of it a little bit for even the Braves fans that we know who were a little bit more upset. But like, you know, it obviously you're not going to please every fan ever, but like it's hard. Like, you know, it's a thing I'll say often, right? Like when you're playing the Phillies specifically, right? If Bryce Harper hits a home run against you, hey man, that's Bryce Harper.
that's a two-time MVP, future Hall of Famer.
You like, can't be upset when a dude who hits 30 to 40 home runs a season hits a home run against you. You know, what you want to do is make sure you're striking out Kyle Schwarber and Alec Boehm and Nick Castellanos. You know, like those guys are homers, right? But like they also strike out a ton. You want to make sure to neutralize those bats. If you don't neutralize Harper's bat, like, yeah, man, that's like a top 10 player in baseball. Like, hey, it sucks.
Shout
but
out
like,
to ESPN for listing him as number 40 in their top 40 players to watch in October. You know, thanks for giving him more ammunition.
Exactly. But you know, like it's the same thing, right? Like the Phillies are a good team. Was their record the best record? Of course not, right? But like, it's a good team. You can't get pissed to lose to the Phillies. But I mean, you can be sad, you know, like, and then you know, look out the window and wait for spring, right? That's what.
Watch the snowfall.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, they're like the Phillies could have probably easily won 100 games this year if they weren't missing Harper for the first 2 months of the year. Like, it's not a bad team to lose to.
It is Roger Hornsby, by the way. I just wanted to double check the quote. I stare out the window and wait for spring.
Stare out the window. Yep.
That, I think, is all of our news. I don't think I'm forgetting anything. I think that's it. Man, we got some. Oh, Scherzer, I forgot. Yeah, we're gonna talk a bit about this in the ALCS preview. But Max Scherzer appears to be ready to pitch in the ALCS, which is huge for the Rangers, who, you know, suddenly take out a okay pitcher. Who I forget who their fourth starter is here, but take him out and replace him with, you know, a guy who is a little rusty. Obviously, he's got to shake some rust off, but is a Cy Young pitcher, is a dude who has, you know, excels in big game moments and big game scenarios. So I think this could go well for them. Dane Dunning is that fourth one for them, who is a perfectly fine starter, right? But if your rotation goes from Montgomery, Heaney, Uvalde, Dunning, or whatever, Montgomery, Uvalde, Heaney, Dunning, I don't remember the exact order, and you take Dunning out and replace him with Max Scherzer, hey man, that's great. Like, you usually can't be unhappy about that. And it's nice because like Dunning, who had a good season and had a decent start, can be there to back up Scherzer if Scherzer, you know, has any issues. So it's like, it's great to have a guy like Scherzer back on a roster like that, because that, you know, it just bolsters, like,
could probably also mention this. I think we talked about it a little bit in the NLCS preview, but there is a chance that Rhys Hoskins could be on the Phillies NLCS roster.
Yes.
He's been taking at bats in Clearwater. He's been moving forward well with his rehab. He would be exclusively used as a pinch hitter if he makes the roster.
Right. And same thing here, right? Like as a first guy off the bench, it's great to have Rhys Hoskins instead of, you know what,
Jake,
like,
Cave.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, so. Rhys Hoskins is a guy who you want coming up in a big game situation, potentially
worth keeping an eye on. It could be 50-50 he makes the roster. I think we'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah, it might make the World Series roster even if he doesn't make the NLCS roster.
He'll definitely make the World Series roster if he misses the NLCS.
Pat, we didn't really talk about this. What are the odds that if Schwarber continues to struggle, Hoskins maybe DHs a little bit?
Ooh, I don't know.
Because, you know, Schwarber,
I don't know.
Right now in the playoffs is hitting like what? Like .120? Like, he's not been hitting strong, right? And
certainly
here in the CS, but like if it doesn't and you have Hoskins available, obviously you can't play the field.
Yeah.
Your DH is not a strong DH, you know? Like,
I think it'll depend on how Schwarber does in the NLCS and if they move on. Because again, listen, man, I'm not taking the Diamondbacks for granted. Like, they're a chaotic team. If the Phillies do move on, I think it all depends on how Schwarber did in the NLCS. If Hoskins, because like Hoskins can hit lefties,
right?
I don't think you'd want Hoskins in there against righties right now, though.
Well, I mean, Schwarber can't hit righties or lefties, so.
But he takes walks. That's the thing.
Yeah,
he sees a lot of pitches.
He does take walks. He does see a lot of pitches. He hasn't done much of that yet in the playoffs either. I think he's taken what, like 2 walks all playoffs. So yeah, that's the thing is like Schwarber has been so weak so far.
I mean, listen, this was the same thing we saw last year. He didn't get it going until the NLCS.
In 27 plate appearances, Schwarber has 4 hits, 1 walk, and 10 strikeouts.
We'll see.
You know, and two of those 4 hits are doubles, right? And he has an RBI, but like that's not good.
It's not, no. You know, I think there might be some shakeups in the lineup. I think you might see Castellanos go to cleanup.
If Hoskins is feeling healthy enough to hit, then you know I don't see it necessarily out of the question that he DHs can take over for Schwarber. But I don't know. I don't know what his health situation looks like right now. If they want to, you know, have him doing that much work, or just like, hey, you can pinch hit and we keep him there, you know. So
we'll see.
We will see. Pat, thanks for joining me here on this intro. We're going to hear from you later in the episode.
Yeah.
All right, folks, with that all out of the way, it's time now to talk ALCS with Phil and Frack. One thing to note, Frack had some audio issues throughout, so he has like some crackle and robot-y voice going on at points. There's nothing really I could do about that, so hopefully it's not too jarring for you. But let's go now to that chat. Back, folks. I don't know if we had a full news segment just now or just me introducing this. Hopefully, it was a full news segment. But if not, you just heard my voice, and now my voice is back. Either way, you probably just heard my voice. I'm Naim, as you know, joining me to talk about the Astros and Rangers. First off, representing the Astros, it is Phil. Welcome back, Phil.
Welcome to the 7th annual Astros Invitational.
And talking on the Rangers side, it is Frack. How's it going, Frack?
It is going good. Thank you.
And we're going to start first by talking about the series that just wrapped up. And Frack, we'll start with you because that series wrapped up first. The Rangers swept the Orioles in a bit of, I mean, probably the 100 team losses, probably the number 2 most surprising one, I would say, of the sweeps, you know, after the Diamondbacks Dodgers sweep. So talk us through, you know, what went right for the Rangers there and what we have to look ahead to.
Why did you kill the beautiful flying Rutschman?
It's funny that you say surprising because I was definitely on here last week saying it was going to be a sweep. And so it didn't really occur to me the Orioles had anything to stop the Rangers. Now, the Rangers were way hotter than I thought they would be. That team, this looked like the team from April, May that I thought, oh, we're not going to see this team because they were fading down the stretch and you're either a first half or a second half team. But the offense was incredible. They won that first. I mean, yeah, the first game was close. It was a normal postseason game. I think it was close. It was interesting. But then, those next. I mean, what do I expect to see from the Rangers going into this series? I have absolutely no idea because I also went on this podcast last week and said they'd get swept by the Astros. So I don't know. I think with the pitching that's coming back, they're gonna have to. They have so many different ways to flexibly change their rotation around.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing, right, is that is Scherzer coming back, and that'll be... We'll talk about that in a second. Let me, Phil, let's talk real quick about the Astros and Twins, a series which felt closer than it was, I think, at points, right? Like, it was 3-1 at the end, but it felt like a 3-2 series, I think.
I agree. It did feel a lot closer than it actually was, and that's a lot of credit to Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota has... arguably the best pitching staff in the American League, at least the top three bullpen in the American League. As you saw in game four, when Rocco was bringing out the bullpen for the bullpen game, outside of Joe Ryan and the lefty whose name I can't remember. I'm sorry, Lewis. I'm sorry. But they were very, very locked down. With the exception of, you know, Mr. 1228 OPS Jose Abreu coming back from the dead, proving he was the first baseman that we should have traded for or signed in the offseason all along.
Caleb Fielbar, right, is who you're talking about there?
Caleb Fielbar, yes. That's exactly who I was talking about.
Jose Abreu, I think, being the, you know, obviously...
The big shock.
Alvarez, but like with the season that Abreu had, being this the second best hitter arguably of the ALDS, which, for the Astros, like,
which is really funny, because I know we don't give away division series MVPs, but if there was a division series MVP, it obviously goes to Yordan Alvarez with his 1784 OPS, which consequently was a 2025 OPS going into game four. Him having a 4-walk game would have lowered his OPS. It was what an absolute showing. What really won the Astros the series was their defensive play and their bullpen, which is exactly what I said the last week. The bullpen would be the clutch factor in this division series, and a lot of love to the Twins. It was a great series. Having traveled to Minnesota and met Twins fans in the past, are great. If you guys had managed to beat us, I would be rooting for you now. No disrespect to Frack or any other South Oklahomans listening to this podcast. But yeah, Astros did prevail, and I think we finally, as Dusty Baker talked about in the last week of the season, turned on that postseason switch, and the Astros are inevitable. Jeff Passan said it, and I think it's true.
Yeah, so with that out of the way, let's talk about the series upcoming. We already talked a little bit about the Rangers having some pitching coming back. These teams seem a little bit more tightly matched. They obviously were in a tight matchup all season, with the number of injuries obviously coming through on both sides, and a lot of those guys looking healthy here going into the ALCS. Let's start with rotations, and let's start with the sort of the biggest rotation news, which is that Max Scherzer has said he'll be back for the ALCS. What does that do, Frack, for the Rangers rotation going into this ALCS?
It postpones any bullpen game, or maybe even eliminates a bullpen game. And it totally takes Dane Dunning out of the rotation. I'm pretty sure they'll remove Dane Dunning. Maybe you get an Andrew Heaney start piggybacked by a Dane Dunning. But that's kind of your weak link on this rotation that, without Scherzer, I mean, it was doing fine in the postseason because Eovaldi was amazing. That game three, that was the Eovaldi that the Rangers had been seeing up until he got injured. It was just dominant. He made the Orioles look like the 82-win team I think they really were on the inside.
Wow.
And the atmosphere was amazing. Of course, it was the first Rangers playoff game in the stadium, and Corey Seager's like 50th postseason game in that stadium. So that was fun. I definitely think that with Scherzer, even if he's like 40th percentile Max Scherzer, who's not very good and he gives up a bunch of runs, you're just postponing the weaker side. Well, hey, Kershaw can always just come home to Texas, I guess, if he wants to do that and suck.
He fit right in with that bullpen.
Oh, Oh goodness. There will be a point where Jose Leclerc and Aroldis Chapman isn't going to do it. And I think that the Astros are definitely going to expose that. So the Rangers just have to postpone that as much as humanly possible. I don't think the Rangers at times can out-hit the weakness in the bullpen. I don't think they can. But sometimes they can make it work, I guess. But yeah, with Mitch Garver, you start Mitch Garver would definitely be the ALDS MVP, I guess. And you start to get to where, yeah, you can pitch around Seager, but then the Rangers need a mid-tier player to step up, and they have that. So if they have that, then maybe you can survive a Max Scherzer postseason implosion, which would be great to see for me because that man hurt me in the playoffs.
Now, Phil, aside from a couple of, you know, bad moments from Framber Valdez, the Astros rotation looked solid as always in the ALDS. What are we looking at here in the ALCS?
So obviously the game one starts going to go to old man Justin Verlander, my favorite baseball player of all time.
Are we going to see former teammates Verlander and Scherzer from earlier this year start against each other in game one of the ALCS?
Oh, please tell Bruce Bochy to throw Max Scherzer out in game one. Please.
The New York media would absolutely lose their minds.
They would have a field day. It would be incredible.
Oh, hey, who do you? It would be amazing. So Verlander's going to get the
legends.
Yeah, right. Verlander's going to get the game one start. Bomber looked very beatable against the Twins, and I think a lot of it had to do with his. Fromber is very much a cerebral pitcher where you get inside of his head and it'll get him off of his game. And I think the Twins were really, really good at doing that. I think the smart move would be to limit Fromber starts to games at Minute Maid Park, where he tends to excel. He's a much better home pitcher than road pitcher. Game three is probably going to go to Christian Javier, who has been very, what's the word the kids use these days? Mid. He was very mid this season. And then against the Twins, made some mechanical adjustments and slowed down his delivery, slowed down his windup, used the pitch clock to his advantage, much to the malignment of the Minnesota fans. And pitched arguably the best game of his season. So Javi looks like he's getting back into that 2022 form where he was nigh unhittable.
Nice.
The big surprise of the rotation comes from Jose Urquidy, who pitched in game four and absolutely balled out. And this was a guy that missed 5 months of the season, gave us, I think, six or seven starts and looked like he was not going to be much more than an afterthought in the bullpen, but managed to lock down the Twins for six solid innings, just giving up a run and striking out at one point five batters in a row, which is kind of not normal for Urquidy. But I imagine that's your top four rotation going into the ALCS, obviously backed by the best bullpen in the American League.
Yeah, I would.
Because this is an intra-divisional matchup, we do have quite a bit more data than we normally would. Although Urquidy did not face the Rangers this year, but Christian Javier did and gave up eight runs in, I think, five innings. If the Rangers can figure him out like they did earlier this year, that could bode poorly.
That's the game that I'm worried about is the Javier game and which Fromber is going to show up.
I am very excited for game three as I'm going to it, but and especially because Javier is probably my favorite Astro. He's a lot of fun when he's on, and I do think that his age, there's a degree of he's still learning. Like he skipped double and triple A. Like come on. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him do anything this postseason, even if that is turn things around against the Rangers or absolutely suck. Jose Urquidy is one of the worst pitchers I can think of. Good for him. He had a good game. I think he's going to suck. Like, it just seems very safe to say he's going to blow up. So the Astros rotation will be interesting, but I could also see something like Verlander imploding and then Urquidy coming on and doing great against the Rangers. Now, I don't know.
Now, keep in mind, this is ALCS Verlander, who is who is known for being absolutely nails, not World Series Verlander, who is not known for being any good.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Still, you've got a lot of, I don't know what Seager's numbers are against Verlander, but I'm sure they're good.
Well, let's talk about the lineups then. Let's start with, we already mentioned Seager, so let's talk about, maybe the American League MVP Corey Seager and the Rangers behind him. How do you feel, Frack, about that Rangers lineup up against the Astros pitching?
I definitely think that if once you get past that top of the order, depending on where Carter is, and again, he just keeps continuing to have the amazing postseason. I think that once you get past Carter, you'll get into these weaker links. And again, all it takes is one or two of these weaker links, and lineup turns over amazingly fast. And I know the Astros bullpen is good, but I definitely think that they'll be game planning even more to try and throw the best against Seager, Simeon, Barber, Carter, and then maybe throw in a lesser tier guy. And I think that's where they're going to have to be very careful, because if one of the lesser tier guys screws up and all of a sudden Leody, it's a double or something, you're screwed. Because if Simeon comes up to bat with the bases empty and he hits a solo home run, oh well. But it's the Leodis, and I don't think Josh Smith or Duran are going to make the roster, but those type of players where the pressure starts to mount. So yeah, I'm not worried about the offense exactly for the Rangers.
For what it's worth, Corey Seager against Verlander is 4-for-15 with 4 singles. So.
Oh, that's weird.
It is surprising. You would think that would just be one of those matchups, but yeah, I guess it's not. On the Astros side, Phil, what are we looking at against the Rangers here?
We can expect more of the same Death Star lineup we've seen against the Twins. Jose Abreu obviously is the biggest surprise of the postseason so far.
Which is wild, right? Because again, if you had said at the beginning of the season Jose Abreu was going to be the second best Astros hitter in the ALDS, if you'd said that in March, you'd be like, yeah,
that makes sense.
But if you said it in July, you'd be like, what?
He's still on the team?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, obviously our offense is going to be anchored by Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez, Kyle Tucker, Alex Bregman, Jose Abreu, the resurgence of postseason Jeremy Pena, who I think carried a .333 batting average throughout the ALDS, very quietly had a great series, although not hitting for much power, but definitely hitting or putting the ball in play in key moments. And then, of course, we'll probably rotate between Chaz McCormick and Michael Brantley to some extent in the outfield. And Martin Maldonado will continue to get starts at catcher because Yainer Diaz decided he did not want to show up to the ALDS, much to my disappointment. But I mean, this is
the pitchers love him, you know.
Yeah, and pitchers do. Apparently, they do. I'm not. This offense is a little bit streaky. And I think that the Rangers' best bet to beat the Astros is to limit their big playmaking ability. Because what happens is the Astros score runs in bunches. It's not, you know, death by a thousand cuts. It's two big innings that just kind of turn the tide of the game. So limiting those big innings will be key for the Rangers. But the way that the top five of the lineup are playing right now, it's going to be a tall order, I'll say, especially as hot as Yordan Alvarez is.
All right. Well, I guess let's wrap up as we always do with the whatever you want to call it, picks to click, keys to the game, all that stuff. Phil, what do the Astros have to do to make it back to the World Series this is the third time in 3 years, 3 years?
That would be the third year in a row. Yes.
Yeah. So what do the Astros have to do then in this 7-game series to make it back to that World Series?
All right. So we're gonna turn the clock back to September 4th, September 5th, and September 6th of this year, where the Astros put up scores of 13-6, 14-1, and 12-3 against the Texas Rangers. We had I know the regular season doesn't matter now that we're in the postseason, but this is a team that we have played 13 times this year. They have the book on us. We have the book on them. Finished the season series with a 9-4 record and won the final series, the final series of the season by a combined score of 39-10. That's what they have to do. Jump, be patient with the starting pitching, because as much as I appreciate Max Scherzer coming back at Frack, I know your confidence. I can hear it in your voice with Max is going to come back. You have to be worried about what you're going to get out of him, especially when Max Scherzer came back from injury on short rest against the Astros in September and got shelled for 3 innings. You don't want that to happen. What Max Scherzer are you going to get? So our keys are: be patient with the starting pitching, burn those starting pitching arms out, make them go long into the game, hit the pitch count high early, and get to that bullpen. Because while the Rangers have one of the best offenses in the American League, I'll give them credit there. Their biggest weak spot, the soft underbelly of the team, is that bullpen. If the Astros can get to the Rangers bullpen, it's game over.
Frack, same question here. What are the Rangers' goals here? Is to keep the Astros out of the World Series and make their first since 2011?
2011, yes. It's that play you're thinking of, by the way. So I will turn the clock just a couple months back farther than that to July 26th in Minute Maid. The Astros jump out to a quick 3-0 lead, and then the Rangers start scoring runs in bunches. And this was the game, if you remember, where Adolis took a little too long admiring a home run, and the bench is cleared. And that's kind of where my key is. It's a mental game, as much as we want to give cliches about it. It's a mental game, and there are times...
That happens physical, right?
Exactly. There are times, I think especially this was true in the Phillies series, where all it took between the Astros winning and the Astros losing was a Michael Brantley clubhouse speech. And so if the Rangers can absolutely take the momentum early in this series, absolutely silence a Minute Maid crowd, and then build from there, I mean, the final game, they're... The final for the game I'm talking about was 13-5. This was an Andrew Heaney start, and he looked okay. But Framber in Minute Maid absolutely sucked. 3.2 innings, 8 hits, 6 earned runs, 2 walks, 1 strikeout, 2 home runs. And from there, you were starting to see weak spots in the Astros. Well, Seth Martinez, I don't know if he's going to be on the roster or not, but...
He's not.
Didn't think so. He's an A, though, or a former Athletic. So I think that you start to wind down if you can get the momentum early. Yeah, even if you're having to out-hit the Astros in a 13-10 slugfest because your starting pitching doesn't work very well. I think it's all about momentum, and if they can go into that game 3 with a 1-1 series, I think they have a chance. That being said, my money's still on them getting swept.
So let's do two last things. First up, our predictions, and then second, if your team does win, who do you want to see in the World Series? So I'll start with Frack.
Okay.
You did say you think they're going to get swept. Is that your true yes prediction, or is that just like a, you know,
fear,
keeping yourself from too much optimism?
No, I think they're going to get swept. Or maybe it's in five. Okay. Maybe, but I know.
I don't think it's a bad prediction. But if the Rangers do win, who would you want to see of the Diamondbacks and Phillies in that World Series?
It would be funny to start and end the year versus the Phillies. Those would be the two hottest teams, arguably. And the Astros as well. But the Rangers and the Phillies would be the two hottest teams. But in Arizona... Also,
by the way, the vitriol between a Philadelphia-Dallas World Series...
Oh my god.
Especially it's going to spill into NFL fandom.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's going to be bad.
I mean, and I'm sure he'll mention it later, but that's what Pat said essentially in our group chat. He's like, I can't root for a Dallas team. I just can't do it. I'm like, hey, I get it.
Well, it's an Arlington team, if it makes him feel any better.
Sure. Because Arlington's a city.
Yeah, a city. In air quotes, but for I think Arizona would be a lot of fun. An Arizona Texas World Series would be very weird. I don't think a lot of fans and media are gonna think it's interesting, but that would be a very wacky series. So that's kind of what I'm rooting for: Texas, or at least Houston, Arizona, because I think it would be funny if the Astros lost another World Series to an inferior National League team. That's kind of the ultimate comeuppance here. But so yeah, I just want Arizona to be in there.
Phil, same question here. What's the prediction, and who do you want to see in the World Series against the Astros?
I'm gonna go back to hopping on this podcast through the 21 and 22 seasons. I would like Frack to know that in my ALCS and World Series projections, I'm 3-1. The last time I got a projection wrong was the Braves Astros World Series, and I think I've come within a game on each of those series. So I'm going to go with my initial gut feeling, and I'm going to say that the Astros are going to do what they have done all season, which is show the Rangers who the big brother is in the AL West. Astros in five. Who do I want to face?
Yeah.
I don't want to face the Phillies. I really don't want to face the Phillies. that's not entirely true. I think Philly's got a great baseball team, and I've quietly become a big fan of them. And they are about the hottest baseball team on earth.
Now, do you mean they're playing well, or do you mean in attractiveness, or both?
Both, except for Brandon Marsh. Not a big fan of the beard. But I mean, look. I'm a happily married guy, but you know, Bryce Harper's a good looking dude. I am comfortable enough to say that yes, that's a handsome man right there. I don't the Phillies, after dispatching Atlanta in a very, very hotly contested, well, I mean, not the results, but the bad blood of that series, and then
the results, it felt a lot like the Astros Twins, where like on paper it didn't seem as like it was seemed more one-sided than it actually was. It really felt
but even watching that series, it still felt like it was all Phillies. It's, with the exception of the game that the Braves won, which was pretty close. The Phillies wins were quite lopsided.
It was 3-0, and then the 10-2 win, much like the Astros and Twins 9-1 win. The last one was 3-1, like that one, and if the Braves led early, like that one really could have gone either way. Like you said, they're hot. They're a hot team, and we've said this on the podcast before. The vibes are immaculate.
The vibes are immaculate. The Phillies are a hot team, and if we were to face them in the World Series, obviously they're a very loud and rowdy team coming in with a chip on their shoulder, getting to get their revenge. And I'm not sure that they won't get it if we play them in the World Series.
Yeah, I agree that if it's a Phillies Astros World Series, I think it's gonna be the Phillies.
I'm not gonna say anything because I don't want to go on record on this podcast and be right again. So I'm gonna reserve it until you know we do this in a week. And we'll do this in a week and a half after we take care of the Rangers.
Sure. Well, with that, unless there's any other thoughts that you two have, I think that's gonna do it for this segment. Thanks, guys, for joining me.
Yes, thank you. Last point.
Thanks for having us.
Point of order. And thanks for being a good sport, Frack. We're both Texans. Yeah. We both know good barbecue. Yeah. So mm-hmm.
It's us versus everyone else.
Yes. No Missouri Texas barbecue.
You're in the minority here. You're gonna lose this argument. I just want to point out the Rangers rallying song for the postseason is a Creed song.
It is. Yeah, they were.
It's Creed. I know we're the evil empire now. I know that 95% of Major League Baseball hates us, and that's fine. We've accepted it. We kind of relish the villain role these days, but our team's rallying song is Mike Jones and Paul Wall. At least it's a good song. I mean, come on, y'all. Creed?
It's pretty trashy.
We gotta bury this.
Yeah, it's pretty trashy. I don't know where it came from.
I think the origins of it are back from the, and I want to say it was the 1998 Thanksgiving game in Dallas when Creed performed at Cowboy Stadium is where the Dallas love affair for Creed came from. And yeah, just ugh. I have to hear that song all postseason now, and it makes me that much angrier that every cutaway song after the Rangers have a big inning or whatnot, I'm gonna have to listen to Scott Stapp. And that's the Rangers' fault, everyone. If you're watching baseball and you have to hear Creed as bumper music for every commercial break, you can thank the Arlington Rangers.
Blind mercy.
That's enough of a reason to root for the Astros.
Creed and homophobia.
Different band. That's a different 2000s band. The reason. All right, that's gonna do it for this. I forgot. Phil said at the beginning that he wanted to take a crap on Creed, and I forgot to give him the moment. So thank you for taking it, Phil.
That's what I'm here for.
That's gonna do it for this. Let's go now to the NLCS preview with Hack and Pat. Welcome back, folks. We just talked about the ALCS. It's time now to talk about the NLCS. And joining me to talk about the NLCS, probably returning from the intro, talking about the Phillies, is Pat. How's it going, Pat?
I'm just dancing on my own over here, man.
Pat, I'm just guessing that we recorded the intro together because we haven't done it yet. But like,
we probably will be. Yeah,
9 in 10 chance that we're doing the intro together.
Yeah.
Also returning from last week's division series previews to talk about the Diamondbacks, even though he is a Cardinals fan like me, it is Hack. How's it going, Hack?
I'm doing good. Glad to be back.
So we're going to talk this whole time about Edmundo Sosa, right? That's our...
Yeah, that's all we have to talk about.
We'd love Edmundo Sosa here in Philly.
I'm glad that Edmundo Sosa has like landed well in Philly, you know, because he clearly did not have a place on the Cardinals. So like, there's players like that where it's like, you know, when somebody like Randy Arozarena, it's like, man, I wish we had him. But with a guy like Sosa, it's like, hey, we were never gonna keep him. So it's good that he's like having a good time in Philly, you know?
Yeah, he's a nice vibes piece.
Yeah, exactly. Which is basically every Philly is a vibes piece.
Oh man, we'll get into that, but you're 100% right.
Let's talk about the division series first. And last time I started with the sweep, so this time I'll start with the non-sweep, which was the Phillies and Braves series. Which, boy, it seemed. I said this in the last segment that it felt like it felt closer than it was, but it also felt like it should have been even closer. Like, I mean, like I said in the preview last time, right, that it should have gone, like, felt like it was going to go five games and come down to the ninth inning, and it very much did not do that.
But here's the thing. If you look at it, it wasn't really that close.
That's what I'm saying. It wasn't that close, but it felt closer than it actually was.
The Braves never had a lead in the entire... Well, that's not true. They led for two innings. They had two innings where they outplayed the Phillies. But the Phillies just outplayed them the entire series.
Yeah.
They outpitched them. They outslugged the greatest slugging team of all time.
Well, and it was this thing of, like, you know, game two ended on that dramatic double play, and you know, Bryce Harper clearly, like, you know, knew that he made a mistake and was you know, probably beat himself up a little bit that night. And then the next day,
and then Orlando Arcia ran his mouth.
Orlando Arcia ran his mouth, and some reporters decided that he shouldn't, that shouldn't be reported. And that was a whole other drama that I'm sure we talked about in the intro. Again, we have not recorded the intro yet, but I'm sure it's been discussed. You know, the next day Harper comes in and decides that's, you know, he's going to be the player of the game and hit a pair of home runs, you know, and Nick Castellanos hit a pair of home runs in back-to-back games, and just like
first player to ever do that in the postseason.
Yep, and his response was, okay.
Yeah, literally his response. Like, man, just the vibes of this team, and like last night's game four, which was last night, I was definitely nervous going into that, but like the play of the series was Johan Rojas robbing Acuna, like, and Trey Turner becoming the first Philly to ever have four hits in a playoff game. Like, just insane how this team played.
Yeah, for sure. So the Phillies take it, and I mean, like, you know, top to bottom, kind of, right? Like, Schwarber wasn't playoff Schwarber. He was the Schwarber of the season. But like, otherwise, those, you know, these guys, and Alec Bohm was also not great.
I don't think we see Alec Bohm in the cleanup spot for the CS. I think Castellanos is going to end up going there.
But like, otherwise, you know, you have like Castellanos and Marsh and Harper and Turner and, like, you know, and Realmuto, and like, again, Sanott also did not have a great, but like, these are, you know, it's one of these things where, like, everybody, you know, four guys struggled and the rest of the guys really picked them all up. Whereas on the Brave side, kind of the whole team struggled except for Austin Riley, you know,
like even the guys that struggled offensively, like their defense made up for it. Like, I'll take Rojas going 0-16 if we get that play.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, obviously, and that's his job. His job is not to hit.
He's a defensive center fielder.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's talk now about the sweep and you know, Hack immediately after that series ended texted me saying that you were one game off on your prediction that they should have called the 3-0. But
I should have been a little more confident.
The baseball world was surprised by the Diamondbacks sweeping the Dodgers. What were the keys there, and how that talk about that series?
I mean, I think it's it came down to kind of what we talked about. Like, we needed the two guys, you know, the two aces, you know, Gallen and Kelly, to out-duel, you know, Kershaw and take one of those big games to set themselves up. And, you know, we got playoff Kershaw, which was huge. We got what I mean, you can't really say October Mookie Betts, but just kind of all the places that you thought the production was going to come from the Dodgers disappeared. And you obviously got, you know, all the production needed from the Diamondbacks side of things. And, you know, it could have been one of those things where, you know, you have two starting pitchers just kind of either lose focus or lose, lose the edge, and it's just slugfest. But it just became the Merrill Kelly show, and you got to kind of shove in a place you never got to. So
it was one of these things that was like, you know, we talked about the Dodgers pitching not being strong as we were used to in the past, but the Diamondbacks pitching, you know, is also not that strong. But that was the story of the series, right? Where Merrill Kelly went 6 1/3, Zach Gallen went 5 1/3, Brandon Pfaadt went 4 1/3, and you know, the the Dodgers had Lance Lynn go 2 2/3, Clayton Kershaw get one out, you know, Bobby Miller go 1 2/3. So just like Lance Lynn gave up 4 home runs, like back to back to back to back, and lowered the Dodgers starter ERA. Like that's
it's not great. It's not great. And like, just if you, I went back and watched that after, you know, I went and watched replay just to kind of see the pitches and kind of see the sequence like again. And there was kind of a press conference where Torrey Lovello had said like Lance Lynn threw some 0% pitches against the Diamondbacks, and you know, pitches that certain players had never seen from him before. And in that inning, that was not true. So it must have been kind of the first time through the order where that stat or that you know kind of strategy was happening from Lance. But then in that 4-run inning, it was like 92 down the middle, and all right, go see if you can hit it. And then, well, he threw that same pitch, and major league hitters don't miss 92 down the middle again.
Yeah,
that's kind of
Lance Lynn as Cardinals fans. Lance Lynn is a guy who throws a lot of fastballs. He throws a lot of different types of fastballs, but he's a fastball guy. And at some point, you know, if you're throwing a lot of fastballs, that can get exposed by a team that hits fastballs.
I mean, obviously, the moment of the series is, you know, Moreno hitting what appeared to be at the time the 4th home run of the inning, and getting it, you know, changed to a foul ball, and then having to go up and on the next pitch hitting the home run, you know, hit it. And if I don't know if anyone has listened to the Greg Schulte, the radio announcer, call of that, where he's typically pretty even keel, but in that moment he was not, and he was just like, he hit it out anyways, and his voice is cracking. So I think that's kind of the tail of the tape. It was like everything that could have gone, you know, one way definitely went the Diamondbacks way. Any of those 50-50 things ended up with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the hitting there too, very strong, and like top to bottom on this lineup, right? Like I think, what is it? 7 guys had OPSs over 900 in this series: Carroll, Walker, Moreno, Pham, Marte, Alec Thomas, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Like, just nobody wasn't seeing the ball. And you know, part of that is the Dodgers not having it, but part of that is these guys are good hitters. This is a good hitting team. Even when they were a bad pitching team for the last few seasons, they've still been a good hitting team, and they showed that in this series.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think we, that was one of the keys, was, you know, can the offense just keep producing? Especially when they run in, at the time, the concern was Kershaw. I think before the series, everyone's always concerned about Kershaw. So the fact that they got to him, kind of, it really set the tone from game one on.
So now the concern is the Phillies. Let's talk about rotations here. You know, again, it seemed, at least coming into this series, that the Diamondbacks pitching was going to be their downfall. Clearly it was not. Do we expect, you know, the Kelly Gallen fought sort of coming back into 1-2-3 here and being the strong starts, or are we expecting, you know, what do we think here from the Diamondbacks against the Phillies?
So I would expect more of the same. I think it'll be Merrill Gallen fought. I think I will be interested to see if they have a fourth starter. I haven't heard either way if they're going to just try to roll through with 3 and maybe piece together a bullpen game. I mean, we've seen so far that the bullpen's been, you know, not so much surprisingly, if maybe from the last, you know, month of the season, but for a lot of the season, that was a weakness for the Diamondbacks, was the bullpen. And now it's kind of an asset, and it'll be interesting to see if they roll with, you know, maybe a game where, okay, this four, you know, game 4, we're just going to try to bullpen it, and or if they'll just try to roll with those 3 guys and then maybe just get an inning out of some, you know, or one time through the order from somebody else in that game 4. But other than that, I would not expect a lot of change from the Diamondbacks perspective, whether it be pitching or offensively. I think it's going to be a lot of the same of what you saw. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
Yeah. Pat, from the Phillies pitching, what are we looking at here?
I mean, Wheeler Nola game 1-2. Ranger game 3, probably either Walker Sanchez game 4, and then it'll roll back around to Wheeler Nola, Ranger. which is pretty much what I expect from Rob Thompson. If the Sanchez or Ranger game turns into a bullpen game, that wouldn't shock me. But likely it's going to be those four guys, because, you know, Sanchez was pretty good for us this year. But I also know Walker. I think Walker had a pretty decent start against the Diamondbacks this year when we played them. So it's going to be interesting to see who he throws in there at that four spot. But obviously at home, Wheeler, Nola, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. And then, you know, Ranger's such a just a dog in the playoffs that having him game three is, you know, a great way to line that up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you know, the Phillies lineup to me, or sorry, your rotation to me feels certainly stronger than the Diamondbacks here.
Well, it's not the corpse of Lance Lynn pitching, that's for sure. or the corpse of Clayton Kershaw, too.
Definitely the Dodgers rotation fell apart in many ways, and so I think, well, let's talk about lineups here, right? Where the Diamondbacks lineup certainly pounced on the Dodgers. How do you feel about the Diamondbacks lineup here against that Phillies rotation compared to, again, the Dodger rotation that was not strong?
So yeah, I think it's going to come down a lot to how they start. I think that was this kind of the story from, you know, almost every, I mean, both series, both the wild card and the divisional round, like how the Diamondbacks started the games offensively was huge, and it really set tones throughout the whole thing. There's never really been a game where the Diamondbacks have had to like piece together a comeback in this playoff. And so I think that's going to be key, is can they jump on one of these guys early? The thing with the Diamondbacks is they've played a lot of these, you know, playoff games almost in a way that they didn't play in the regular season. Not to say they didn't hit home runs in the regular season, just it was never at this rate. So like, it's great that that's happening now. I think the big key for the Diamondbacks is if that power goes cold, will they be able to take a step back and say, hey, the power's not here this series. Maybe we're, you know, not so much overmatched, but we're not getting those fastballs down the middle from the corpse of Lance Lynn. We're not going to get that. And can they take that second to pump the brakes and say, okay, we're going to go back to manufacturing runs? Which, if you've watched, you know, the Diamondbacks, you know, over the course of the season at all, that is how they play. They get on base, they steal bases, they hit and run, they put guys in motion a lot. Which, you know, that's another thing to watch in this series is JT Realmuto and, you know, stopping it. I know the Phillies affectionately call him the best catcher in baseball. And I think that that's going to be a big storyline here is the running game. And if the power isn't there for the Diamondbacks, are they going to take the second and be like, nope, we got to go back to this. And then will JT Realmuto be able to stop him?
Yeah. For sure. I mean, the Diamondbacks they didn't do a ton of running in this division series, like you said, like, which is a surprise from a team that did a whole lot of running in the regular season.
Yeah. It was so. kind of like that first Brewers game. It was the exact opposite of what everybody expected.
Yeah. It's two stolen base from Corbin Carroll is what you expect, and then one each from Marte, Pham, and Walker. Also, the fact that it was from Walker, too. Whereas, like, in the regular season, you know, there's Carroll, Pham, Perdomo, like, Jace Peterson didn't really get on base, but, like, Perdomo got on base, and he didn't, like, get a steal in, you know? Yeah. So,
right.
For sure. Pat, on the Philly side, that lineup, you know, you don't have... I was going to say you don't have Bryce Elder to beat up on, but I don't know that Bryce Elder and Brandon Pfaadt are that different of pitchers. So,
well, you know, there's that, and you know, we don't know who's going to be the game four starter if it's a bullpen game for the Diamondbacks, and you know, the Diamondbacks bullpen is a bullpen that the Phillies can absolutely feast on. You know, Gallen has had our number, but Merrill Kelly hasn't been too good against us, so. And I mean, the other thing here is like, it's not just the lineup that's a factor. It's the fact that you're coming into Philadelphia, and this crowd has been a factor this postseason, just like it was last year.
Yeah,
and I'm going to be interested to see how, you know, these pitchers that haven't been here before can handle that. Because, you know, we saw it affect Spencer Strider. We saw it affect Bryce Elder. You know, we saw it affect the Padres last year. You know, the only team it didn't really affect was Houston, but Houston's been there. Like, they know how to handle that. Right. So I'm going to be interested to see how they handle it. But, like, it's a predominantly right-handed pitching staff. So, I mean, that bodes well for these guys. I mean, obviously Harper's going to do what he does, and that's just come up when needed and take charge, you know.
And that is for us with a lot of what we talked about in both the wild card and the division series previews, right? It's the fact that teams like the Diamondbacks have not been, and you know, the Rangers that we talked about as well in the last segment, have not been there. And, you know, like, how much is that going to expose? And you know, like I said, in front of a crowd like Philly, like,
yeah,
that is a crowd that can really make or break a team. And like you said, it didn't break the Astros, because the Astros have much postseason experience. They've been there a ton in front of so many different crowds, and they're, you know, in many ways the villains of baseball. They get booed everywhere they go. Whereas the Diamondbacks,
aren't used to that.
It's a lot of younger guys, and then Merrill Kelly, who also has no real postseason experience, you know, so.
Yeah, and you know, it's like this lineup, like, when the moment, there's no moment that's too difficult for them, you know, especially with Harper. Like, he comes up when he's needed, and he delivers. Like, and we talk about superstars in baseball, but, like, in the playoffs, usually the superstars don't deliver in those moments. Harper does. Yeah. Like, we don't see that. But, like, there's never a moment too big for him. He's always been able to deliver. And now you got Castellanos hot. And I mean, and
that's a big thing, right? It's like, because we talked about how Castro is a very streaky hitter, but if he's on a streak right now, that's you know, bad news for the Diamondbacks.
And Trey Turner is scorching the ball. JT Realmuto was scorching the ball in the series, and you know, Marsh was good. I think Schwarber's gonna get going in the CS because it took the championship series last year for him to get going.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of like, it's a low velocity pitching staff that Schwarber and these left-handed hitters are going to feast off of.
And that's to what Hack said, you know, it's if Kyle Schwarber sort of figures it out at the top of the order and the Phillies put together really strong early innings rallies at the top of the order, that is what, I mean, it's exactly what the Diamondbacks don't want, right?
No.
Yeah.
And like, there's the stolen base aspect of it as well. Like, the Diamondbacks can run. The Phillies were running all over Atlanta in that series.
Yeah.
I think that kind of comes back to the Moreno thing. I think that he's been the X factor for the Diamondbacks in so many ways that the, like, how long has it been since we've had two, like, kind of not so much series defining, but, like, really strong leadership, you know, at the, you know, behind the plate at the catcher position in a series like this, where, like, these truly are, like, probably two of the best catchers in baseball at this point, especially when you look at the statistics. You say 2004?
Yeah, 2012. Posey.
Oh,
okay. Posey
and oh yeah. Yeah. That's probably it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm guessing there might be something else that I'm not remembering off the top of my head, but certainly that would probably be the most significant example, right? 2012.
Right.
No, for sure. Well, let's talk about, I mean, you know, we've hovered around a little bit, but let's talk about sort of the keys to the series here. For, let's start with the Phillies. What do they need to do to make it to a back-to-back World Series here?
They just need to keep doing what they've been doing. Like, keep pitching well, keep hitting well, just do what you did against Atlanta and keep that going. Like, they're on a different level right now. I don't think I've ever seen a Philadelphia team like this, and it's not just how they're playing, it's the vibes around the team too. It's just like, this is a team that just loves each other.
Yeah.
and are playing for each other.
Ton, right? Like, and we talked about, honestly, we talked about it in the last segment, for what it's worth, is the Phillies vibes are immaculate. There is not, I don't think I've ever seen a team with better vibes in baseball, period.
Like, the 08 team was nothing like this.
Yeah.
And it's just like, if they don't win the World Series, I'm going to be crushed. Like, I'll be happy if the Diamondbacks advance here, but like, this is going to crush me because I've never loved the team like I love this team if they don't advance. But just the way they're playing, the way everyone's playing for each other, the way guys are picking each other up, you know, Soto put two guys on. Strom came out of the bullpen, took care of it. You know, Bryce Kimbrel was a little wild. Johan Rojas made sure that ball didn't fall. These guys pick each other up.
Yeah.
You know, Ranger gave up a home run to Riley. Cassiano steps up the next half inning and delivers a bomb to tie the game. They refuse to lose.
Yep. Hack, you already mentioned getting a lead early. Any other sort of keys to the game here?
Well, I think the big thing is a lot of what you guys just said is going to be the part that they have to fight against for the Diamondbacks is. Everyone, you know, media, everyone's going to be on the Philly side. Obviously, the crowd's going to be insane. And it is the Diamondbacks' job, and something that kind of Torrey Lovello has said already is like they have to stay connected, stay within themselves, and stay in this moment together, just kind of like the Phillies will have to do. But they have to not let this stage get bigger than what it is. It's kind of like the opposite of kind of from the Philly perspective. From the Philly perspective, you know, they made this run last year. They're climbing the mountain again. And like you heard Pat say, like, he's going to be crushed if they don't get out of this, you know, if they don't get a World Series out of this. And I 100%, like, I see that and I agree with it from their perspective. But from the Diamondbacks' perspective, it's almost the opposite. Like, they have to almost say, hold on a sec, you know, yes, this crowd's nuts. Yes, it's loud. Yes, it's probably a much more rowdy place than a lot of places the Diamondbacks have played. But the bases are still 90 feet, you know, maybe a little less with the bigger bases now, but the mound's still the same distance.
89 feet. And that, just, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, so it's they just need to remind themselves that this is a baseball game and that they are just as much a good team and an LCS competitor as the Phillies are. And I, you know, if it were me and I was Torrey Lovello, I'd say, hey, this is the only reason a lot of these names are known from the Philly side when it gets down to the depth question is, well, they made a World Series run last year. Of course we know all of these guys on this team. It doesn't mean that, you know, next year we're not all going to know Gabby Moreno or Saul Frank or something like that. So I think for the Diamondbacks, it is just, play your game, stick with this, and you know, stick with what's worked. And if that, you know, if the long balls aren't coming, you've been manufacturing runs all season. And the good news is about an offense that manufactures runs is that it travels really well. It doesn't matter how loud the crowd is. You don't need to have that big swing. You just kind of, you know, you get a guy on, you get him over, you get him in. You don't need that big, you know, kind of knockout blow in terms of like a David and Goliath, like they, you know, fortunately got in the Dodgers series.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, let's real quick do predictions for the series and something I did in the last segment as well. Who do you want to see in the World Series? Assuming you predict your team, even if you don't predict your team, if your team makes it, who do you want to see from the AL, Astros or Rangers? Let's start, Hack, with you. What's your prediction, and who would you rather see the Diamondbacks face here?
So prediction-wise, it is a tougher call than it was in the divisional round. The divisional round, it felt kind of like I had mentioned then that, like, hey, like, this is not the same Dodgers team that you've gotten. Unfortunately, no, this is the same Phillies team you've seen for two years. Like, kind of to Pat's point, like this is a tough out. Like, this is going to be a tough series in every sense of like that phrase. I am hesitant to pick the Diamondbacks. I think the question mark around the game four starter and just the general atmosphere is really, really tough. If the Diamondbacks are going to win this, it's going to be in seven. I think that they'll have to really, really fight and claw to get through this. That being said, I'm going to stick with that prediction. I'm going to say Diamondbacks in seven. And just as a bonus, I'm going to say this is probably the most entertaining series of the entire playoffs. I think the World Series will be kind of a clunker. I think this is the one that everybody needs to tune in to watch.
Well, I think one particular iteration of the World Series could be, I think two could be a lot of fun. You know what? Actually, I think most of them could be a lot of fun.
I think they all could be fun matchups.
I think they honestly all could be fun World Series matchups for various reasons. Hack, would you rather see the Diamondbacks face in the World Series here then, the Astros or the Rangers?
For me personally, I think I would rather the Diamondbacks play the Astros. I think that is that David and Goliath matchup, and I actually think it favors the Diamondbacks a little bit better since they've most recently seen the Astros. They've kind of seen that. They've seen Verlander recently. They've seen, you know, the big guns, and they've seen that side of, or that team the last week of the regular season. So I think that plays into their hand a little bit. So I'd rather them see the Astros than the Rangers.
All right. And Pat, your prediction?
So I'm going to give the Diamondbacks credit. When we were previewing the wild cards and, you know, as we were getting down the end of the season, the Diamondbacks were the team that I did not want the Phillies to play in the wild card round, because of the chaotic energy surrounding the team. And it's awesome to see that the Diamondbacks have gotten here and to this point. That said, there's a big difference between a 3-game series and a 5-game series. You know, this is a 7-game series. I believe in my heart that the Phillies are going to take this in 6. I think it's going to be a tight series because Gallen has always pitched well against the Phillies, and if they get 2 wins out of it, it'll be those 2 wins. But it's going to be tough, you know, knowing that they've got to start 2 games in Citizens Bank Park, and then, you know, the Phillies are a good road team. And, you know, I look at the Diamondbacks roster, they're playing well now, but, like, the thing that just sticks out to me is that run differential, that negative run differential that team has. And, you know, I think that's something that Philadelphia is going to be able to take advantage of. So I've got Phillies in 6. As far as the World Series, man. So I can't, in my heart of hearts, ever cheer for a Dallas team. So I'm going for the Astros. And honestly, like, there's this kind of like deja vu feeling I've been having over the last few weeks.
You have to be rooting. You don't have to be rooting for the Rangers. Who would you rather beat in the World Series? I think is the question.
See, that's tough. That's
I think I know your answer.
I don't, right? Because it's 50-50. It's either you get the rematch from last year, or you get Philly Dallas in the World Series. Those cities would go ape over that
one. And I do think if it does line up being Philly Dallas in the World Series, the Eagles play Dallas that week.
Do they really? Oh my
I
god.
I believe oh my, so.
One of those cities fire and Philadelphia.
If I pull this bonkers up here.
I was gonna say win or lose, it'd be Philadelphia.
So let's see. The World Series starts.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Eagles schedule. I have to check this real quick.
While he's looking that up, I do have one bone to pick, and I wanted to get this out before we ended it. I just want to point out that the game 3 start time is absolute bullshit for an LCS round. That is absolute bullshit.
why are we 5 o'clock? Local start it's on so a Thursday, stupid.
At 2 o'clock local start on a Thursday in Phoenix, there will be like maybe 5,000 people there if they're lucky, or it'll be like it might be like playing.
They can fill the Coyotes arena with that.
It might be playing like playing in a library. It'll be so weird, and it might be just a ton of Phillies fans that take the day off work and make
Phillies fans taking over that stadium.
It's gonna be nuts because it'll be like Friday and Saturday, whatever. But the Thursday start time is complete bullshit.
Yeah, it'll absolutely be Phillies fans taking over that stadium if that's the case.
Because I would 100%. And like Phillies fans will take days off work for this. I don't know if there's like, I think there's IMAX fans who will take the day off work for it, but not enough to like really like push this like needle like the Phillies fans will. So I do think that you're in for
Phillies fans could take over Arizona and kind of make that another home stadium for them. Like we see it with Eagles fans when they go to Arizona.
Right. And I will say, as a former Arizona Cardinals employee, the fact that that does happen does bother the Arizona Cardinals owner. I just wouldn't put that up.
Well, that's why he stole Gannon from us, and you know, that's working well for him. So, Eagles schedule. So, the World Series is from Friday, October 27th to Saturday, November 4th, if a Game 7 is necessary. The Eagles play the Dallas Cowboys at 4:25 p.m. on November 5th.
Yeah, I mean,
no.
what a weekend.
Man.
Weekend. Gonna be
honestly, I'm fine with either of them. Part of me wants it to be Houston just because, like, it would be cool to have that rematch. And if the Phillies do win it, it would be cool to win it from Houston. But nothing would fuel my Dallas hate boner more than Phillies Rangers.
Yeah,
so
well,
it'd be a battle of Callum Scott versus Creed, man. So, you know, and hey, Creed died in Philadelphia and Rocky. So Texas Rangers, get some.
Yeah, Phil also ended the previous segment by crapping on Creed. So,
they're already looking fastest.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's gonna have to do it.
Give us your prediction.
Oh, sure. You're right. Good point. I think I didn't get my prediction on the last one either. I mean Phillies. It's Phillies. I'm also gonna say Phillies in six. That's what I was thinking as well. I mean, if the Phillies don't at this point, if the Phillies don't win the World Series, like I think you know, any neutral fan or Philly, like any neutral fan is not gonna be happy. Like there's no, you know, like that's such a I mean, it's a vibes team, right? It's such a great vibes team. And dude, I think
there's video of Liam Castellanos. They brought Liam Castellanos to Xfinity Live, and he's up on the balcony partying with the team and singing with the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, vibes are ridiculous.
I think every World Series matchup can be fun here. Like Diamondbacks Astros is a David versus Goliath. Diamondbacks Rangers is just fun. Like it's one team that's never won and one team hasn't won in 20 plus years. Rangers well,
there is
Phillies
kind of a, there is kind of an Arizona Dallas rivalry.
Yes, that is true. Cowboys and Cardinals don't like each other.
And then, like we said, Rangers and Phillies is fun for that, for the football rivalry, and Rangers and Astros for the rematch rivalry. Like, I think any version of the World Series at this point is going to be an enjoyable World Series, at least storyline wise.
Yeah.
On field wise, we don't, you know, anything can happen. I think the most fun on field is probably Phillies Astros.
It just kind of feels like we're destined to get to that. Like, I don't, I just get that feeling.
In the World Series, and I don't know if anybody wants that except for Phil. So, all right. Well, that's gonna do it for this. Guys, thank you so much for joining, and thanks for talking about this, and looking forward to seeing these series.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And there's a good chance, you know, depending on what the series look like next week, we might have a mid-series check-in. But if we don't, then we may not see Hack again. But Pat's here all the time. So
if this is truly the end for my appearance in this playoffs, it has been fun, and I got one round right, so I'll take it.
There you go. Yeah, there we go. All right. Well, let's kick it to the outro, and that's that. All right, folks, thank you so much for listening to this episode. That's going to do it for us. Rain Delay Radio is executive produced by Lewis. My name is Naim. I edited this episode. I also hosted the whole thing. I hope you like my voice because I was here the whole time. Pat co-hosted the intro with me and also was in our NLCS segment along with Hack. Our ALCS segment, I was joined by Phil and Frack. Our theme music was composed by Chuck Leese. Rain Delay Radio releases usually every Monday morning at 1 a.m. Eastern time, but sometimes those things change up during the playoffs, so stay tuned for that scheduling. But I think Monday morning will be our next release, regardless, because the World Series doesn't start until after that. So thank you once again for listening, and we will talk to you next week.